Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. I'm Poppy, your Chorus Call operator. Welcome and thank you for joining the Allwyn International Investor Conference Call and live webcast to present and discuss the second quarter 2023 preliminary results. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Robert Chvátal, CEO. Mr. Chvátal, you may now proceed.
Thank you, Poppy, and good afternoon, at least from Europe, to everyone, and welcome to Allwyn International's second quarter 2023 earnings call. As always, I will walk you through key business developments and then hand over to Ken for some more detail on our numbers and financial developments. So if you sort of have a slide deck in front of you, what is set out on slide five is that I'm quite happy. What you can see, I'm quite pleased to report that Allwyn has had another strong quarter of growth and profitability. This has been supported by the continuing focus of our team on executing our growth strategies, as well as the resilience of demand for our products. Our consolidated total revenues increased by 115% year-on-year, benefiting from significant contributions from the Camelot acquisitions and that we completed during the first quarter of this year. If we strip these out, the Camelot UK acquisition, the total revenue growth in our existing geographies remained strong, coming in at 7% year-on-year. The second quarter also saw a further step up in profit and free cash flow generation. This was driven by the acquisitions as well as by impressive growth in our existing geographies, where EBITDA increased 15% year-on-year. So top line 7%, bottom line 15%. This is probably the headline figures for the whole Allwyn second quarter. This performance benefited from our relentless focus on the product and the customer. We continued to innovate and improve the customer experience in the digital channel, which supported strong online growth during the quarter, as well as in the retail channel, where we continue to move forward with digitizing the customer proposition. Allwyn performance also highlights, once again, that we are structurally resilient and enjoy structurally resilient demand for lottery during periods when consumers continue to face inflationary headwinds and our favorable positioning on the cost side as well. Moving to inorganic growth, I'm pleased to report that during the quarter we deployed further capital to once again increase our shareholding in OPAP by electing to take part of our dividend as scrip, and we now have an interest of 50.4% in OPAP. This quarter was also the first full quarter of ownership of the former Camelot operations in the UK and US. Camelot UK and what we are now proud to call Allwyn Lottery Solutions Group. We've been spending time on integrating these acquisitions and are focused on delivering on the great potential of these businesses as well. Moving to financing activities, as I highlighted back on the Q1 call, we were very pleased with the successful issuance of 1.3 billion euros of bonds at the end of April. As a reminder, this included our all first bond in the dollar market, which further diversifies our financing sources alongside addressing all our material maturities for the next several years well in advance. Overall, you could see it has been another strong quarter. Now, moving to slide six to take a closer look at our organic growth, you could see the split of our revenue performance between the online and physical retail segments over the past few quarters, as well as comparison with 2019, which is pre-COVID. I won't say too much on this slide, but I'm pleased to say that the message is the same as last quarter, and for that matter, for the last several quarters. The online channel has continued to grow strongly, and Q2 saw a year-on-year increase across all the regions, both in absolute terms and also as a share of revenue, as well as a significant step up compared with pre-COVID. In the Czech Republic, we were approaching 50% of GGR generated through the online channel, which compares with only 20% immediately before the pandemic. We have a similarly high level of penetration in the UK, where we saw 47% of GGR online during the quarter. As you can also see, our impressive online growth has been achieved alongside resilience of physical retail sales across all these geographies. Now, turning to physical retail, which you can see on page 7, we highlight once again one of the reasons why this channel continues to perform well. We continue to make great progress de-anonymizing our physical retail players through loyalty schemes, alongside our efforts to digitize the physical retail channel. And this provides us with data that enables us to upsell and cross-sell through targeted marketing, as well as providing us with great potential to protect our players from excessive play, which remains a key priority. Now, moving on to slide 8, our sustained organic growth is also driven by our consistent focus on product development and innovation, as well as the relentless focus of our teams. On top of this, as a multinational operator, we have the ability to leverage learnings and best practices across our geographies, which continues to be a key strength of our business model. The second quarter has been no exception, and I picked up a few examples out of this slide 8. So for example, in Austria, we have a reminder of the consistent frequent launch of new instant games, paper scratch tickets, ensuring we keep our product fresh and appealing. In the Czech Republic, we have released a new Android version of the Sazka Bet application, as well as launching various new fast draw-based games. In Greece, following the launch of a new sportsbook in March, we launched the new pop-up online lottery platform in April, launching Kino, which is, by the way, by far the biggest draw-based game in the country, and other lottery games alongside with the existing Joker offering. This was a really significant step forward in our proposition, as Kino is, as I said, the most popular game in Greece and was not previously available online. Now, moving to UK and US, it's a similar picture of focus on product and innovation, and this underlined a fairly strong cultural fit, you know, with Allwyn, what it was and now what it is, including the UK and US. In the UK, the team has been running a number of the exciting Must Be One and Million Maker events, or these are promotional events, as well as launching scratch card sales through Sainsbury's online. We also had some great marketing activities around Eurovision and the Women's Football World Cup, where the Lionesses ended up in the finals, capitalizing on our support for high-profile good causes in the UK. In the US, as well as the new game launches, we have made a significant upgrade to our technology stack, which facilitates enhancements in fast-play game development and experience that will bear fruit in the future. Now, turning to slide 9, our focus on progressively digitalizing physical retail is continuing. In Greece and Cyprus, just after the end of the quarter, we launched a new retail sportsbook platform. And this improved proposition includes an updated user interface and user experience on the OPAP store app and SSBTs, which is self-serving betting terminals, allowing to improve speed and new functionality. In terms of forthcoming innovation to call out, we look forward to the launch of Lotto as an annuity game in Greece during this half, as well as Greece's joining of the pan-European pool jackpot game Eurojackpot in March of 2024, which will be material for our Greek market because it's the last market where we don't have any pan-European high jackpot game. Now, turning to page 10, I've already mentioned the increase of our shareholding in OPAP, and we remain very proud of the ongoing strength of this national champion. You may also have seen OPAP's announcement in its Q2 results that it plans to carry out a share buyback program, and the buyback will be up to 150 million euro by the end of 2024, subject to market and general economic conditions. This expands OPAP's remuneration to its shareholders and comes alongside its scrip dividend expiring. Finally, on slide 11, we continue to see our focus on ESG as intrinsic to our success, as well as seeking to contribute to local communities. I have picked up a few highlights from the first half on this slide, and would just draw your attention to the first couple of columns. These note the publication of our ESG report in June, as well as a couple of examples of the ongoing steps that we take to promote safer play for our customers. With that, let me hand over to Ken, who will walk you through the financial performance of our business in the second quarter.
Thank you very much, Robert. As Robert's already mentioned, this was another great quarter financially. Our consolidated EBITDA was up 35%, and we saw very pleasing performance across all the key metrics. The comparison of our consolidated numbers on a year-to-year basis is impacted by the consolidation of the two Camelot acquisitions in Q1. So that does introduce some noise into the consolidated numbers, meaning that the Q2 numbers are not in aggregate comparable with Q2 last year, and also actually, to a lesser extent, not comparable with Q1 either, as the consolidation happened part of the way through that period. So in this slide deck and in our other disclosures, we've included some bits of analysis and data points to help explain the impact of those acquisitions and to show the like-for-like picture. And we're very pleased to be able to say that the like-for-like performance, the underlying organic performance of the businesses that we owned this time last year, was also very positive. Excluding the impact of those acquisitions, consolidated total revenue, which is GGR plus some small ancillary revenues in a couple of geographies, was up  7%, and our adjusted EBITDA was up 15%. And we're also very pleased to be able to say that our individual businesses are performing very well as well. We saw good top-line performance across all our markets, pretty much, and across products, and our margins continue to be best in class. We once again saw the value of our highly diversified business model, both in terms of products and in terms of geographies, where we did have slightly weaker performance in a couple of markets and products. That was more than outweighed by strong performance in the other businesses. This is particularly encouraging performance as we all know, the consumer sentiment in many countries has been somewhat challenged by cost of living factors. But once again, we saw that demand for our products has been very resilient, and that reflects, as always, the low ticket prices of our products, the fact that a lot of our players play by habit, the fact that lottery is fundamentally just a really unique and, for many people, very compelling proposition. So once again, we saw good top-line performance, further evidence of that resilience. Pro forma leverage was 1.8 times at the end of the quarter. At the time of the most recent bond deal in the second quarter, we marketed off a leverage metric of 2 times as of 31st of December 2022. So we've deleveraged very nicely as the business has grown. We've seen the EBITDA increasing and also seen good cash flow generation. So put together, those factors have delivered quite significant deleveraging over the last couple of quarters. We actually also paid a dividend of 200 million during the quarter, so the underlying deleveraging performance was even stronger. Moving to slide 14, we show our key P&L metrics as reported, and then on the next slide, we'll talk through them without the impact of the acquisitions. On a consolidated basis, total revenue was up 115%, net revenue was up 51%, and adjusted EBITDA was up 35%. the UK and US businesses have slightly different economic structures from our previous businesses. So that does introduce a mixed impact on our margins. In particular, the UK is a large business with a relatively significant good causes contribution in its P&L. It's one of the major sponsors of good causes across a wide range of sectors in the UK. We'll be reporting those contributions together with gaming taxes in the P&L, and that's the key driver of lower aggregate margins in the quarter. We'd also like to highlight the good performance of our equity method investees, which are up 30 million year on year. The large majority of this amount relates to our interests in Lotto Italia and Betano, both of which have been performing well. Slide 15 is the same table, except excluding the impact of the acquisitions. You can see that total revenue grew by 7%, GGR by 8%, and net revenue by 9%, respectively, supported by good organic growth trends across most of our markets and product lines. Operating expenses increased by 15%, which includes costs related to the launch of the new national lottery license in the UK in February 2024. And we delivered a strong adjusted EBITDA margin of 49.5%, which is actually slightly higher year on year, excluding the impact of the acquisitions. Slide 16, we show our key P&L and cash flow metrics over the last several years on a consolidated basis on the left and pro rata to our economic interest in the businesses, so reflecting the minorities in our Greek and Austrian businesses primarily on the right. We're very pleased that once again this slide shows a really positive trend across all the key metrics. We've been able to deliver consistent revenue growth, strong margins, and high cash flow generation consistently across the period. Each metric on the page has increased by a CAGR of over 25% since Q2 2019, which is a track record that we're very, very pleased with. And the comparison with last year also looks great across all the key metrics. Moving on to slide 17, we summarize the impact of the acquisitions on the EBITDA level and we hope to explain the buildup of the P&L from the individual geographies. As you can see, the metrics only include the contribution from Camelot UK and the Camelot US business, now renamed Allwyn LS Group, for part of Q1 and the whole of Q2. We're going to continue to present financials for each segment and Lotto Italia on a 100% basis in all our disclosure, as we have for many years, and we'll continue to do the same for Camelot UK as well. In our press release and MD&A, we also have some additional information on the Allwyn Lottery Solutions Group, primarily that being the US business. But given its relatively small size, we don't have a separate slide in this presentation. So on the next slide, we'll go through the key highlights for each of those businesses, starting with Austria on slide 18. The Austrian segment performance in this quarter once again really demonstrates the value of our diversified product portfolio. The performance in numerical lotteries, which is the largest product line in this market, and in fact, I think in probably all of our other markets, was relatively weaker in the quarter. That was largely driven by shorter jackpot cycles in EuroMillions during the period and stronger performance in the comparable period. This is a game which is played by people maybe even more than other lottery games because they want to win a large prize. So there is an element of sensitivity to the size of the jackpot. So the more weeks that the jackpot isn't won, the higher the jackpot, the more people play. Over even a couple of periods, these factors do tend to even out. But at the same time, in the course of individual periods, you can see a bit of volatility as a result of this phenomenon. So last year was a very strong period when jackpots built very nicely. This year, unfortunately, they kept on being won, I guess, fortunately for the people who won, but not so fortunately for us. And on the other hand, the VLTs and casinos, instant lotteries and iGaming performed very nicely. And the net result of that was that year-on-year revenue growth was 1%. EBITDA was down year on year, with an EBITDA margin of 33% of net revenue. The year on year picture largely reflects, again, a strong performance in the comparable period, which had relatively high margins compared with the other periods of last year, and also some cost shifts of major expense items between periods both last year and this year. So in fact, this year's margin was in line with the average margin for 2022. So although this wasn't the best quarter ever for this business, we don't see any underlying challenges, and once again emphasizes the value of the diversified portfolio that we have. In the Czech business, we also saw on page 19 good top line performance with total revenue up 9%, particularly good performance in iGaming and instant lotteries. We did also see a benefit from an FX tailwind. So the euro numbers benefit to the tune of approximately 5% from favorable exchange rate movements. EBITDA was down 2% year on year. That reflects primarily higher marketing spend. This is a cost category which we have a lot of flexibility to increase or decrease in the short term and medium term. We do this very actively to optimize ROI, so increasing advertising around new product launches or large jackpots and then reducing them in other circumstances. We did also see some cost pressures in this business. The Czech economy is generally doing relatively well. Downside of that is some inflationary pressure. And there's a further accounting factor which optically increases the reported margin. So we changed the accounting treatment of gaming taxes, which is removed from the adjusted EBITDA metric, but it actually also has an impact on the numerator of the sum. So removing that impact, the margin would have been about 1.5% higher. Moving on to slide 20 and Greece and Cyprus, performance in the quarter was very strong, in line with the very strong performance that we also saw in Q1. We saw high single-digit or double-digit growth for all products, as a result of which total revenue increased by 12% and GGR by 13%. We're particularly pleased with the online performance, with GGR up 25%, and physical retail is also doing very nicely, with GGR up 9%. That was supported by some of the product enhancements and commercial initiatives across the portfolio, which Robert mentioned earlier. And we're also looking forward keenly to the launch of Eurojackpot in 2024. In any market, this is a great product, but it's an especially good product in a smaller market where the national jackpot game can't generate big jackpots. So very much looking forward to that. As Robert mentioned, this performance has supported a revision to OPAP's shareholder distribution policy with the introduction of a buyback, also with a record interim dividend, up more than three times compared with the same dividend paid last year. One of the Greek brokers put out a note this morning describing this as a cash avalanche, which is a nice phrase which we may use in our future disclosure. And we also saw OPAP management reaffirming their guidance from earlier in the year. The UK segment on the next page reflects the operations of Camelot UK. This is essentially the operation of the current license. Activities related to the next license are currently included in the corporate segment. GGR was lower by 3% on a constant currency basis. That was largely due to the exceptional Euro Millions performance that I mentioned also in the context of Austria in the prior year period. Adjusted EBITDA was actually up compared with the comparable period last year at 50 million. The higher margin was partly owing to the impact of some mixed effects on gaming taxes and good causes contributions, which may not be repeated in subsequent periods. Moving on to Italy on slide 22, we saw a continuation of the positive trend that we saw in Q1. Revenue and EBITDA were up 2% and 3% year on year. It was a slightly smaller increase than in Q1, but Q1 did benefit from some small COVID impact on the prior year period. So in fact, the underlying performance is very much in line with what we saw in Q1. Moving on to slide 23. The business continued to deliver very strong free cash flow generation across all the geographies. Adjusted EBITDA minus CapEx was over 95% of EBITDA, in line with previous periods. As usual, the EBITDA that we present is clean. It includes limited adjustments. The small CapEx increase that we saw in the quarter to 18 million largely reflects some costs related to preparations for the transition to the new license in the UK. The majority of those expenses, though, are treated as operating expenses under IFRS, so they will be expensed and in our P&L as cost items. And those actually account for the majority of the adjustments that we report to our EBITDA. There's a table in the appendix summarizing those adjustments for your reference, as always. On slide 24, we have a summary presentation of key items from our cash flow statement year to date. In addition to the good operating cash flow generation that we've seen in our consolidated businesses, with operating cash flow before working capital of 606 million, we've also seen some good inflows from our equity method investees, in particular Lotto Italia, which paid an annual dividend equal to 100% of last year's net income, as prescribed in the SHA. Dividend payments to minorities reflects the payment of large dividends by our subsidiaries in Greece and Austria in Q2. Q2 is normally the period when these businesses pay their dividends from the previous financial year, so that's the period during which this metric is the highest. And this year, both those businesses paid record dividends, so this amount will be lower in subsequent quarters. Obviously, we receive also our share of those dividends, and we receive, as the majority owners of both of those businesses, a larger amount than goes to the minorities. So those payments obviously provided substantial liquidity at the issuer level. On slide 25, a summary of our leverage and how it's progressed over the last couple of years. At the end of the quarter, our net debt to LTM adjusted EBITDA was 1.8 times. We had a comfortable net cash position at the subsidiary level. All our operating entities had a net cash position, with the marginal exception of Greece, where there was a very small net debt position at the end of the quarter after payment of dividends. Calculation of our leverage on the metric which is used in our older bonds is in the appendix to the presentation. On that basis, had leverage as is pro rata EBITDA to pro rata net debt of 2.3 times at the end of the quarter. On slide 26, a brief summary of our financing activities during the quarter. The good performance that we've seen over the last several periods, and the good operational and strategic momentum that we've enjoyed, provided a good backdrop for our financing activities during the period, and we've continued to proactively manage our capital structure. In April, we issued 1.3 billion euros equivalent of bonds. That was split into 665 million of euros due in 2030 and $700 million due in 2029. We swapped 600 million of the dollars into euros at a rate of 7.01%. Before credit charges. We're very pleased with the outcome of the transaction. It was our debut US dollar issuance, and as we've always valued diversification of our funding, as in anything else, we're very pleased to have access to the US dollar market for the first time. We now have no material maturities until 2027 and have increased our share of fixed rate debt. Finally, the repayment of Apollo during the period, their investment, as a reminder, was at the next level up in the capital structure above the issuer of our bonds and our bank debt. That's the next step in our strategy of simplifying and optimizing our corporate and financing structure. In the quarter, we also upstreamed $200 million to our parent, as I mentioned, as a dividend, and drew $43 million on an accordion facility under our syndicated loan at the Allwyn International level. We drew the remaining $43 million at the end of its availability period in August as well. For your reference, we've included some new slides on our capital structure in the appendix to the slide pack. We hope they're useful and we'll be updating them each quarter for your reference. On slide 28, we have our commentary on current trading. As in last several quarters, this is essentially unchanged from period to period. In fact, since we announced our FY21 results, really the material messages haven't changed. So I'm not going to go through it in detail, but at a high level, we're very pleased to say that our sales performance and our cost positioning is demonstrative of the strength of our business model, of the resilience of demand, and of the favorable cost structure that we enjoy. And as you can see, that's really borne out in the results that we delivered this quarter. So on 29, I'll just finish with some high-level thoughts on the strategic and financial performance during the quarter before moving to Q&A. It was another good quarter on the financial side, good growth, profitability, and that's, of course, against a background where some consumer-facing businesses have been somewhat challenged. That reflects the good delivery that we've seen on our inorganic and organic growth strategies and the benefits of diversification. On the organic side, we've seen really good delivery online and also in the physical retail channel, as well as some really exciting product initiatives in the quarter and also coming up. The inorganic growth strategy is progressing, even though this was a relatively quiet quarter. We did see an increase of our interest in OPAP, and we're also very focused, of course, on the integration of the Camelot acquisitions in the UK and in the US. We see massive potential in these businesses, so we're really focused on making sure that we deliver the potential that they represent. On the financing side, another good quarter, further diversification of our funding sources and extending maturities. And we're pleased to see the downward trend in our leverage from an already moderate level at the end of 2022. So to sum up, we feel very well placed for the remainder of the year and next chapters of the story. With that, I'd like to ask the operator to open the line for Q&A, please.
The first question comes from the line of Chinchilla Ricardo with Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hey guys, thank you so much for all the detail and for taking my questions. You know, for us in the U.S., it's probably easier to keep tabs on the domestic market, given, you know, the competitive nature, but it's a little bit tougher to, you know, keep tabs on the international market. We just are seeing that it's probably competition heating up, so I was wondering if you guys could comment a little bit on the competitive nature, if it has changed just because of the changing ownership from some of your competitors, and maybe if you guys are seeing any impact in terms of pricing, you know, competitors of new deals, or even, you know, on the iLottery side, if you guys have seen any change, as you know, this is an ongoing market and opportunity for you guys that is also being pursued by a lot of your competitors. So want to get, you know, some sense on how you're approaching this opportunity and how competition is going to impact your chances of expanding in this segment.
Okay. I think we could both probably comment on it with Ken. I was trying to make notes of, not one question, but several, you know, types of questions. I would start with what you call pricing of the new deals. We have in our footprint a situation where we, of course, from time to time, you know, the licenses are long tenure, 10 years plus, have to extend our licenses. So I should probably start by saying that we have a 100% track record of extending our licenses. We will extend our license in Italy. When it comes up in 26, we are committed to extend our license or several licenses in Austria a year later. And that will go on, you know, and when it comes to so-called pricing of the new licenses, maybe just to explain, we are, you know, not in the business exactly as IGT or Scientific Games are, where they are, you know, supplying technology, and therefore, you know, that supply of technology is scrutinized and questioned, and you have to price it better or reduce the price. We are not in that business. We run the lotteries from A to Z. We run the whole P&L. So it's not only about technology. It's one of the important components, but not definitely not the only one. It's what evenly important is what the vision, how you modernize the product portfolio, how you make the brand of lottery contemporary, how you work with the shift between retail and digital, and that's equally important. So you basically, you know, balance nicely not only the penetration of your market, but also frequency of the usage of your customer base and the intensity of usage, i.e. price points. So in that respect, we are not really that concerned. When we extend the license, of course, we want to further grow. So I think that would be my comment to, in the US, if it happens so that we would look at something else than just Illinois, we could do that maybe, but it has to be a proper operating model, probably in the along the lines of private management contract, because this is where we as an operator, lottery operator, or I would like to say operator of choice, we would like to excel and prove that we are able to run the lotteries better than the state itself as a dedicated professional lottery operator. When it comes to competition in the lottery sector, maybe there is, I'm not so sure what you meant by changes in the shareholding structure of one of your competitors. I was trying to sort of piece together what you meant, but we do see, you know, there are other private lottery operators, you know, Francis Deger or, you know, the Lottery Corporation in down in Australia. We in Allwyn remain the largest, or you know, the type of operator with the highest number of flags of the footprint, which is an advantage because we don't have, you know, all the eggs into one basket on one big, even big market. And as such, we actually welcome the competition to the point that, you know, more and more governments slash operators, regulators around the world will realize maybe instead of running it as a ministry or department of the ministry, let's make it run by somebody professional like Allwyn, like it was done in the UK. And I'm not sure, you know, I think, Ken, if you sort of managed to note other, you know, sub-questions, feel free to comment on it or help, you know, it was somebody, I guess, from the Deutsche Bank. Help me what you meant by changes in the shareholding structure of the competition, because I'm not sure to what I should react.
Sure. I'm happy to add a couple of points there. I mean, I guess you may have been talking about Scientific Games. Is that right?
Correct. I was just mentioning about Scientific Games. Yeah. They're changing their shareholdings and their push to expand into iLottery, and how, you know, this push with, you know, some of their competitors trying to break into iLottery, how's that, you know, shaping up the competitive environment?
Yeah. Okay. So this is actually, you know, a very interesting question. So, I mean, Scientific Games has been one of the leading players in specific areas of the lottery sector for many years. They have a great central lottery systems product. They're our partners in the UK in the fourth license for the central lottery system, and they're also the market leader by some way in scratch cards. I don't think that anything in the change of ownership really implies any change in that positioning or any change in their strategy. In terms of iLottery, clearly this is important part of the industry going forward, and it's a major focus for the incumbent suppliers of the systems. And actually, I think the one area where you could say there is an increase in competition is exactly in the iLottery space, in particular in the US, right? Because in the US, as you know, iLottery is much less developed than it is in Europe. In Europe, it's existed for a long time. In the UK and the Czech Republic, it's approaching 50% of our GGR is online. And in the US, I think in aggregate, it's still in single digits, and only 13 states have online lottery. So much less developed product. And that's partly because the historic structure of the industry in the US has been slightly different from in Europe. And it's been, to some extent, dominated by Cygames and IGT, who have not historically been so strong in this area. So actually, from our perspective, I don't think in general the competitiveness of the market in Europe or the number of competitors has changed in any way. The one area, I guess you could argue that there has been a bit of a change in the dynamic over the last few years, which is certainly a positive for us, is in the US, and iLottery is an important part of that trend. In terms of other areas of competition, I mean, there is typically one lottery operator in each market, so we don't directly compete with others for the lottery product. I mean, at the end of the day, it is a consumer product. No one has to buy a lottery ticket, although many people do religiously every week for many years. So we always think of ourselves as being a consumer company. We're not a utility. You know, we're operating under a concession. We have many aspects of our business model which are similar to some regulated utilities, but at the end of the day, we need to offer a compelling proposition to the consumer. So we are competing for people's discretionary income at the end of the day, but there's no direct competition for lottery products, and in particular the jackpot game is really the only product out there that offers people the chance to win, or at least to dream of winning a very large sum of money. So it's really difficult to imagine where competition for this product could come from, frankly.
This has been very helpful. Thank you so much for answering my question with such detail.
The next question comes from the line of Young Ed with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for taking my questions. I've got three, but I'd ask them one at a time if possible. I guess I had a slightly different riff on the last question. There were some trade press reports that you were an interested bidder in PLI. I just wondered if you could perhaps give any sort of general comment around that. I mean, obviously, it was acquired by a competitor. I just wondered if you could give some sort of broad thoughts. Was it ended up being a bit small in the context of your business? There's obviously, as you said, a huge operational focus right now on the UK and the US, or is this sort of an example of, you know, you holding your capital discipline in terms of the acquisition price? First off, just be interested if you've got any color on that.
No, thank you for the question, and you gave an answer at the same time. So I think when it comes to PLI in Ireland, of course, as part of our inorganic growth strategy, we do review potential M&A opportunities. And I would say on this that for us, the Irish Lottery was not that strategically important acquisition, so that we have to go after this. And you mentioned a focus on something which is strategically very important, which is a successful transition/transformation in the UK, which is ability to sort of cross over also on the other side of the Atlantic. Discipline, yeah. So I guess you partially sort of answered to your question. So this is all I could comment on PLI.
Okay, I'll try and ask a more open one. The second one, you talked about being a bit unlucky, frankly, in the quarter with EuroMillions in terms of the impact on the numerical lotteries business, and Ken, you also made a comment about Eurojackpot and the excitement for next year. Right. I just wonder if you, perhaps you could touch on your thoughts around EuroDreams. I guess that would be the Austrian, the UK business. I guess it's Q4, but any sort of thought process or sort of quantification about how material that product launch might be?
Yeah, I think to start with, I should say that for us in Allwyn, a good exploitation of the potential of the pan-European high jackpot schemes like EuroMillions or Eurojackpot is very important. It's also important so that we enjoy minimum cannibalization between the local national lotto games and European or international games. So I do confirm that we plan to launch EuroDreams, which is the second product from EuroMillions consortium family in Austria at the end of this year. We do not plan to do it, but it's no surprise. It was always the plan, you know, because of the transition into the fourth license. It was not the plan to do it in the UK. So we will focus on the existing annuity game. And, you know, we have so far 1 euro jackpot in our business, which is in the Czech Republic. But we are pleased to indicate that Greece, which is one of the last big lottery companies in Europe with not having pan-European game, would launch it in March next year. And as such, you know, we try to make sure that the best practices of Allwyn, how to minimize the cannibalization of the Keno or especially Joker, which is the national lotto game, and the Eurojackpot is kept to the minimum. And I personally believe this is a material enrichment for Greeks or Greek customers to enjoy bigger than life win possibilities in the magnitude of tens and tens of millions of euros of jackpots, you know, which is not the case for the national lotto. So this is well under preparation. The Greek team is already in the middle of technical preparation to be able to be integrated with the rest of the Eurojackpot family. And as such, I am member of the Eurojackpot ExCom, and I'm pleased to say that the whole Eurojackpot family is very, very keen to welcome Greece as a big, reputable lottery into its realm.
I could just add that, you know, we don't currently have an annuity game in Austria. We do in the Czech Republic, and we'll be launching one in Greece later in the year. But Austria, there isn't currently an annuity draw-based game. So it's quite an interesting opportunity because this is a good product and it appeals to a slightly different demographic as well.
Understood. And then the final question I had, the point you made about the cessation of script distributions for OPAP, just again wonder if there's any color around that, and should we expect you to continue to make opportunistic in-market purchases, or is that a way of indicating that you've got to just above 50 and that's the right level? Thanks.
Yeah. So the script program was introduced 5 years ago was due to expire. So the decision is really the decision not to extend the program rather than to do anything to change what was already in place. On the other hand, clearly OPAP has been performing phenomenally well, and when the business has been generating so much cash, giving shareholders the opportunity to reinvest and essentially reissue new equity doesn't really make sense from the kind of corporate finance perspective. So I think that's the background to the decision. Our interest will naturally increase marginally as a result of the buyback, and we do obviously always have the option to deploy capital by increasing our interest in OPAP through open market purchases. Yeah, this is a really great bit of optionality given that it's a business that we know very well, we like very much. I think that what you've seen over the last few quarters is that we've somewhat slowed down our the increase in our stake. So we took only a portion of the last dividend that was eligible for the scrip program in scrip. You know, we now have over 50%, which in practice hasn't changed anything in terms of the economics. But we always, in terms of the governance, we did always feel that getting over 50% was would be nice. Just clean up the structure in another area. So now we're there. We still have that optionality, but probably on the margin, we're likely to be a little bit less active.
Very useful. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this was the last question, and it concludes our Q&A session. I will now turn the conference over to management for any closing comments. Thank you.
Well, I obviously, it goes without saying that I would like to thank the plentiful participation, you know, for our Q2 call, even though it is fairly boring in the sense it continues with a reasonable solid news of a good balance between top line growth and profitability, which, you know, where the top line growth percentage is, you know, the profitability percentage growth is bigger than even the top line growth. I think Ken summed it up well in the summary slide, you know, where he commented on both organic growth as well as ability to grow inorganically, which should be a integral part of Allwyn's story anyways. It's been always our intention to be on both sides of the Atlantic, and I'm very pleased to you know, have that, you know, story finally with Illinois Lottery. With that, I thank you for your interest, and I hope that we will be able to come with similarly positive news going forward with Allwyn. Thank you very much.